Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Backstep, where we talk about safety, survival, and other things. Welcome to the Backstep.
Well, good evening, everybody. This is Ronnie Kay in New York, and my partner Tom from Farmington, New Mexico, was on the other end. Hello, Tommy.
Hello, Brother Ron. How are you?
I'm getting along, just getting along. We're doing okay here. It was a beautiful day here in the Northeast. The rest of the week's going to be nice. It's in the 70s. It's starting to feel like fall again. And any minute, the leaves will be changing. And being I live in a little bit of northern New York and north of the city, the leaf peepers will be coming out to take a look soon. So beware of the leaf peepers because for some reason, it's the people have to go and drive north to upstate to go see orange and red leaves for some reason. I guess they get tired of looking at the green ones all summer. So that's that. What's going with you, buddy? He's laughing.
I spent the day glued to the computer doing the Smartsheet stuff.
Ah, Smartsheet. And everybody out there is saying, what the hell is Smartsheet? Well, yes. And for the benefit of our listener, probably just one, maybe two people, but for the benefit of tuning in tonight or when you pick it up somewhere else, Smartsheet is a tracking tool that we use for the National Memorial Weekend, sponsored by the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation. And that's coming up in 2 weeks. As you know, I've been bestowed the honor of being the Weekend Incident Commander. Tommy is the Operations Chief. And we do the full boat, Incident Command System / NIMS, open up a command center on the campus of the National Fire Academy where the monument stands. And we kind of run the logistical operational stuff from there. And this will be my 21st year heading into that. And yeah, thanks, man. We've been meeting the command team has been meeting all year since last October. We met every other month to iron out all the little bits and pieces that needed ironing, get all the wrinkles out. So when we come up to that weekend, we can give the families the most memorable experience they can have without any hiccups and that kind of stuff. And everybody worked their tails off this year. Not that they haven't in past years, but specifically, we got the command team together a half a dozen times extra, other than the regular planning meetings with the rest of the committee. So, I'm confident. You know, I have the A team with me, so I'm confident that things will go well like they normally do. But while we're on a Memorial Weekend, just for the benefit of the listening audience, it's the first weekend in October. The actual main ceremony is on Sunday, October 6th, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can tune in to just about anything you stream from, and it'll be streaming in live, and you'll be able to pick it up on cables and satellites. But you tune into the normal fire service websites, you should be able to pick it up. Interestingly enough, last week we were in Emmitsburg for our final planning meetings, and the count for last year, the count last year was 69 firefighters. And I looked at Ron Sonicky, the executive director, Chief Sonicky, and I said, did we ever break 70? And he didn't think so, but they were going to kind of look it up. But we couldn't remember a time when we were under 70. So yeah. It's 69, but we have about 120 because also for the benefit of the audience, what we do is we have fire departments and chiefs come to us years later and said, you know, my guy died in the line of duty. He was never recognized. He's not on the rolls. Here's the circumstances. Here's the documentation. And the foundation retroactively puts them on the monument. The other part of that is this year, for the first time on a nationwide basis, they're honoring line-of-duty deaths due to cancer. And there's the caveat. There's two things here. One, they started last year with cancer deaths just from FDNY, from the World Trade Center. And then the board of directors of the foundation researched it, discussed it, took a vote in the last couple of months, last year to honor this year, firefighters who die of cancer whose state has a presumptive cancer bill, which I believe is about 30-something states right now. So if a firefighter died in 2018 of cancer and they have a presumptive cancer bill, the foundation will recognize that firefighter and put them on the wall. The hope is to moving forward is to have any firefighter who dies of cancer, and whether the state has a presumptive law or not, is to just with the right documentation to get them on the wall down in Emmitsburg. So we have 120, but it was 69 actual line of duties in the year. And I don't know if we've ever broken 70 before. So it's that's encouraging. The unfortunate thing is it's 69 firefighters that we lost, but we broke the 70. And then so next year, you know, this year, I you know what? I'm embarrassed to say I don't know what the current number is today, September 16th, line of duties to date. It's 33, and it's already September. So maybe we're doing. Hopefully, we're doing a lot better. You know, the goals of the Everyone Goes Home program and the 16 life safety initiatives at the time when it was put out there 14 years ago or so was, you know, cut it in fit by 50% 10 years in or 5 years in, another 20%, and we really have it. But the last year was an indication that we're doing a lot better, and this year is an indication we're doing a lot better. So with that having been said, the ceremonies are October 6th. If you could ever muster it up, come on to Emmitsburg. It's open to the public. I think if you see it live, it's a little bit different like anything else. And a specific charge this year is the families kind of won't know, but the size of the Honor Guard pipes and drums are a lot less and a little bit smaller than they have been the past years. We're not sure why. So there's a nationwide call out, and we're looking for as many honor guards and pipers and drummers as we can get to come down. They got to be there for Saturday to rehearse and march across that field, and then Sunday, of course, is the main ceremony. So if you're listening to this and you're in an honor guard, or you have one in your department, or whatever, the guys next door and what is the guys and gals in another department, give them a call. Say, hey, listen, they need honor guards in Emmitsburg for October 6th. Go online. Go on to firehero.org, which is the foundation's website, and see if you can register your honor guards to go down there and make a showing for the families. I mean, we still have 500, 550, but we've had 700, 800, 900 in the past. Now, those families won't know the difference because they have nothing to compare it to. We'll know it looks a little bit smaller, but 400 or 500 honor guards and pipes and drums is pretty impressive anyway. So we believe the families will get the full effect of what that honor guard does and what the pipers do. But we're putting out a call. I know the honor guard itself, the honor guard commander for this year, is putting everything out on social media and websites and all that stuff. But while we have a moment here in our ability to broadcast over the internet, we're looking for more honor guards. So go to the website, firehero.org, and see if we can bulk it up a little bit. Other than that, the staff and the fire service volunteers are ready, and we'll be in Emmitsburg in 2 weeks, and we're going to make it happen. Tom, anything to add?
Yeah. You know, just a shout-out. As you know, Dennis Compton has retired from his position as chair of the board of directors for the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation. He's still going to remain active with the board, but I just wanted to say thank you to Chief Compton for all that him and Chief Sarnacki have done since they've been kind of running the show there. You know, you've been involved with the Memorial Weekend a lot longer than I have. But the stuff I see improving with the way they take care of the families of the fallen has continued to get better. And I think those two guys are kind of the driving force behind some of that.
Well, they're probably the driving force behind most of it, not some of it.
Yeah, okay.
But yeah, Denny decided to cap off a 50-year career. How's that for a round number? For those of you who don't know, he was in the Phoenix Fire Department. He went to assistant chief. He was the number two guy, and then he retired from Phoenix and went to Mesa, Arizona, as chief of department, and spent a couple of good years in Mesa. And then, other than that, I'm sure most of you have run into Chief Compton at FDIC and other conferences around the United States, and he's teaching his leadership gig and all that stuff. And aside from all of that knowledge and all of the work he's done, 50 years worth of work, he's one of the nicest men you'll ever run into in your life. He's just a real, real nice man, and had make time for everybody, and he's just a soft-spoken dude, you know. He really put his touch on the Fallen Firefighters Foundation. So, with that said, I did send him a written note, you know, me and the way I do it, you know, send him a note card. But at the end of the day, the board met and they voted, and they're going to install Troy Markle as the new chairman of the board. Troy is, I believe, he's the CEO of VFIS, Volunteer Fireman Insurance Service. I believe he's the CEO of VFIS. I met Troy quite a few years back, and I bumped into him time to time at shows. And he also, you know, it must run at the board. It's just one of the nicest guys you're ever going to meet, and smart and heads up. And he'll be kind of shadowing Dennis through the Memorial Weekend this year to get the feel for it of what the chairman actually does. And I'm sure we'll spend some time with Troy in the command center talking about what we do and bringing him up to speed. So I'm glad you brought that up, Tommy, but because it should be a national national bit of news, national news. And I know the website's covered it a little bit, but Denny has finally retired and put in a nice tidy 50 years with the fire service, and definitely an asset. You know, we're all better because guys like Denny Compton were around. So, good heads up on that, man. I guess anything else on a Memorial Weekend, Tom, that you can you want to impart on the gang?
I have to do a little bit of bragging for firefighter Shaley Arnhammer, who participated in the Four Corners stair climb on Saturday, and she raised just short of $600 for the National Fallen Firefighter Foundation. I threw some photos of her up on Facebook. She was climbing in memory of a FDNY firefighter from Ladder Company 7, and this is the first time I've actually sat and watched the Four Corners climb, and it's pretty damn impressive. She came over for dinner last night and was complaining about the way her calves felt, but she was pretty jazzed that she did the 110 flights and got through it. And I am extremely proud of her.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, Shaley, is she the sixth generation firefighter, Arnhammer firefighter?
Yes, My grandfather pointed out that we come from a long line of people who are too lazy to work and too stupid to steal.
Well, there you go. That says it all. But good. It sounds like I know Shaley just finished school, and I know she's on her way, and it sounds like she's gonna just fit right into that mold of the firefighting Arnhammers. In history, including her dad. So, good for her. Congratulations, Shaley. Nice job on the stair climb, and we're all proud of you. So, and thank you for doing that and supporting the Fallen Firefighters Foundation. We appreciate that. So that is that.
I saw a bit of news, and I had the opportunity when we were out for the planning meeting last week to talk with Eric Nagel and Bev Donlin very quickly. But they had come back from the National Fallen Firefighter Behavioral Health Conference that was held in Denver September 5th and 6th. And aside from trying to mix clinicians and folks that work in the fire service to have those face-to-face conversations, there were a number of presentations on best practices for fire department behavioral health. The fire marshal here in San Juan County, New Mexico, was able to attend, and he said it was a phenomenal program. And I'm glad to see a lot of stuff being done, especially by the foundation, because I know the quality of their programs, and it sounded like it was a huge success.
Yeah, cool. And the foundation's been doing some big stuff of late, And they got another one coming up. In fact, I'm going next week, Tom, 3 days in Philadelphia. And Commissioner Adam Thiel will be kind of hosting. But it's a high-level technology seminar.
I'm going, but like you,
I'm roadkill on the information superhighway, you know, like you. But
I'm going to say
they're talking about. Go ahead. So I'm sorry. What?
You're bringing a 10-year-old kid to work your computer?
Yeah. No shit. Yeah. No shit. A 5-year-old. You know. But at the at the end of the day, they're talking about the highest levels of technology in cities. Being new cities and new buildings and old cities that are being built. This is on the heels of what I saw and heard at FDIC this year while I wasn't there, as you know. I streamed in the Wednesday opening ceremonies and the Thursday big room ceremonies as well. And on Thursday, Bobby Halton had a guy come in who was an engineer of some type, not a fire guy. But talked about some of the technology, and you know, he's part of this group that builds new cities all over the world, and you know, and talk about, you know, elevated monorails and the stuff we looked at 50 years ago and look like the city of the future. Well, they're actually doing that shit now, you know, the transportation system above ground, underground, it's automated, it's computer run, there's no conductor, that kind of stuff, you know, and moving sidewalks and all that other stuff. But he said something that just it blew me away. He said, let me give you an example of how we're harnessing energy. And he said they were thinking about it, they were designing it, or they're actually doing it at the moment in Atlanta Falcons Stadium. I believe it was Atlanta Falcons where they play football. They realized that when you walk around, when anybody walks around, you leave a heat signature. Okay, like, you know, the cops use our thermal imaging cameras when they're chasing the guy in the woods. You know, they put the camera down, and you can see the heat from the sneakers. You know, they follow the guy. Well, they're putting in some sort of padding underneath the walkways and the field. When the football players are playing on the field, they're generating a lot of heat energy, and they figured out a way to capture that.
Wow.
I didn't believe what I was hearing. They could capture the energy coming off of people walking around and the football players rolling around on the field and harness that. Now, whether they're harnessing the heat or the energy part or both and use it as a recyclable energy source inside the stadium itself. Now, maybe that'll be into a heating system that heats the offices or whatever. So that's the kind of technology that they're talking about now in buildings. So this conference next week in Philly is going to discuss things like that and how it affects fires in buildings and how the fire affects those things in buildings and how the fire department is going to have to it's not like anything else we haven't done already. You know, the electric cars came out, the Teslas and the stuff before Tesla, we had to learn how to cut apart an electric car if we had an extrication. It's like anything else that's new. This is going to be the next thing. So, I'm going. It's sponsored by the foundation, and oddly enough, on 9/11, I connected with my buddy Charles Jennings, who's a professor at John Jay College, and we went to grad school together 30-something years ago. And Charles has been a volunteer a long time over in Peekskill, New York, and all that stuff. And we had dinner and went to a 9/11 ceremony in Peekskill, right on the waterfront on the Hudson River, and it was very nicely done. Kudos to the Peekskill Fire Department. But we were talking about the conference. I brought it up, and he says, "Oh, I'm speaking there." So, sure enough, Charlie and I are driving to Philly together next week. But they're bringing, and I talk about him because he's one of the real brilliant guys in our business. He's up there with Glenn Corbett. They work together with John Jay. He's like Glenn Corbett and some of these other guys that are just, you know, thank God for our brainiacs. At least we have these guys on our side, you know. But yeah, Charles is going to be speaking at the conference next week, and that's the caliber of people where you have a guy like Charles, who's a professor at John Jay and a street fireman, and with all that knowledge and all that stuff, and he can go there and speak to these things and talk about, you know, what are the next steps for the firehouse. You know, we respond to a building that has that kind of system where there's under padded floors, and they're generating heat and harnessing it. Well, what's the system they're using? And you know, do we have a shot at putting the fire out if that system goes on fire? And what about cooling off the building too fast? And all those little thousands of things that we do you know, at a scene. So that's next week in Philly, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. The foundation advertised it. As of last week, they have over 100 people coming. And I'm going to go check it out. What do you think of that?
I'm thinking you know where I'm going with this. Being able to capture fuel gases after dinner at the firehouse could also be another source of energy.
If you didn't say that, you know how disappointed I'd be. You hadn't said that. Ladies and gentlemen, there's no doubt in my mind that I knew that was coming, and Tommy didn't tell me ahead of time. But I know Tommy enough. But, yes, if you could harness all the gas in the station, you could probably heat the station for years and years to come. 10-4, I got it. Oh, very good. But anyway, yeah, so that's what's going on. So the foundation's doing some stuff like that, and we'll go check it out, the high technology shit, next week and see what they come up with. On a different note, I'm sure you picked it up today, Tom. We lost a firefighter today. Ironically, it's the town of Farmington, Tom, but it's Maine.
Yes.
Tom, Farmington, Maine.
No, right.
They had a propane explosion, and they lost a firefighter up in Maine today. So I want to let the guys up in Maine know that our thoughts and prayers are with them specifically, and the firefighter's family. A bunch of guys went to the hospital, including the chief. The house just lives. One of those things. You go to a gas leak, the house let go. It's like the battalion chief in the Bronx got killed 2 years ago. You know, the house blew up and a hunk of roof fell on and hit him in the street. An hour or three after they were there. I mean, this is hours later. But so we always, you know, I bring it up now because as you guys and gals know out there, our mantra is health and safety for the most part. And we take those mundane calls and we get comfortable with them. And we take them for granted. And, it's another gas leak. Oh, it's just another gas leak. Well, today wasn't just another gas leak. Firefighter paid for it with his life. So make sure you dress for the game. Take precautions. Use your meters. You know, fire chiefs buy very expensive meters. Learn how to use them, you know, and you know, basically take every precaution you can because these things happen once in a while. And you know, you got to be ready for – you got to expect the unexpected. That's the business we're in, you know.
You know, I had when I saw the post, I was reminded of the incident in Buffalo where they were using a forklift to move a LP gas cylinder and knocked the head off it. And I think they lost the entire truck company that was making entry into the building, and it exploded. Quick update on the Farmington, Maine incident. That was Captain Michael Bell from the Farmington, Maine Fire Department, who lost his life, who unfortunately is the brother of the fire chief who was also injured in the incident. I think they took six of their guys to the hospital. And right now, all things indicate it may have been a propane explosion. But as my dear brother, Ron, often pointed out, we'll leave the guns holstered until we start seeing reports of what actually occurred on scene.
Yep, absolutely. And that's what we implore to our listening audience. You know, don't keep your guns holstered. Don't start saying, they shouldn't have been here. They should have been doing that. Wait, be patient. There's going to be an investigation. Let's see what the report says, all right? Because you just... You know, the chief that got killed in the Bronx, I mean, he was wearing his gear, but a piece of roof hit him, you know, like a 5x5 piece of, you know, the 4x8s or whatever it was the corner of the building and hit him in the street. So that was one of those, if you try to do it again, you couldn't do it. You know, it's sometimes it's just being in the wrong place at the wrong time. And that was, God forgive me, I can't remember his name. Was it Farrell?
You know, I'm not sure.
I don't remember. So yeah, so keep as Tommy said, keep your guns holstered and until we can figure it out. You know, it's interesting. I was looking at some stuff today, and there was a close call posted in Salisbury, North Carolina, at a live training fire, and the guy that wrote the article did a nice job because he cited about five or six accidents at live fire training over the last 20 to 25 years, 30 years. He started in 1982 in Colorado, then 92 in which was just a severe injury in 92. But they flashed over. This was in Jersey. I was sorry to say I was working in Jersey at the time, but they took an old school bus and welded steel plates to the windows and made it a burn building. And went out
that
of line.
In,
a couple of pro. Yeah, Parsippany, Troy Hills.
Yeah.
The Greystone property.
Yeah.
And they severe flashed over and burned the guy almost to death. Almost to death. And then there was the one in Lairdsville, New York, where they had a line of duty in an old wooden structure, put a bunch of probies in there. There was a whole host of problems. They killed one guy. And that was, for me, that was really the landmark case where for the very first time, they convicted. The assistant chief went to jail for 5 years. He was convicted on an NFPA standard, which was not law or code in the state of New York, but it was just basically a general industry practice and a safe practice. And the prosecutor went after it and said to the jury, there is a national standard, a nationally accepted standard in the fire industry, that when you're going to do a live burn in an abandoned building, this is the standard you should follow. They didn't follow it. The jury convicted that assistant chief on, I guess it was probably involuntary manslaughter, and he went away for 5 years. That's a shockwave through the system. That at the time, this is 19. When was Lairdsville? Gee, I don't have the date in front of me, Tom. But
yeah,
Lairdsville, New York.
It was like mid-90s.
Was it mid or late
but,
90s? Yeah. It was a while ago. So some of you listening might not even been in the fire service. But that sent a shockwave through the fire service, coast to coast, top to bottom, saying, wait a minute, the jury convicted a guy, not on lack of following a law or a code, but on a best practice. He was convicted on NFPA, not following NFPA 1403, which is basically almost NFPAs, unless they're adopted. It's a recommendation. And he got convicted and went to jail. So that kind of started to cross a lot of T's and dot a lot of I's in a lot of places in the United States. But so he kind of cites all of that, and then he talks about the close call in Salisbury, North Carolina. And really what it was is they kind of had everything set up the right way, 1403, the right fuel. Everything was correct. Everything was good. Everything was right. But what they didn't count on was when the guys went up, basically the windows have plywood on them, and they held them with like two nails. So if they choose to vent, or for safety purposes, they give it one good shot with an axe or whatever. They probably hit it with their arms, and it would knock out. Well, there was a guy standing downstairs right under that window. And that's, you know, you go, typical window is, I don't know, maybe 3 feet wide, 4 feet high. A sheet of half-inch ply coming down from the third floor, second floor, it's going to hurt. And I think it grazed the guy in the garden. I think it grazed him, and he got just mild injury or just missed him. It was close, but that could have killed him. I mean, think about it. A sheet of plywood that size coming down that heavy. So I bring this one up for our show because it's not necessarily guys getting caught in a flashover in an abandoned building following 1403. It's not necessarily a guy falling through the floor in the building doing a 1403 live burn. Here's a guy standing in the garden, and here comes the plywood. So I guess it's a statement for – it's always a statement for safety. I can't help myself. But the guys even downstairs and outside got to be fully dressed to the nines, have your helmet on, have your gear on. Hopefully, if it happens, it's going to soften the blow. It'll make it easier. But this wasn't in the building. This was outside the building. Okay, so it's about being ready, being prepared, keeping an eye out. You know, and because again, we tend to get a little complacent with the work we do, and it's only training. It's a training fire. It's under control, and it's true. Training is the most controlled thing we do in our job. You know, and I say our job, I mean all firefighters, volunteer, career, DOD, tribe, I don't care where you do it. When you're doing the job, training is the most controlled thing that we do. We should never hurt or kill anybody at training because everything else we go to is an out-of-control incident. Whether it's a fire, a car wreck, an EMS, a heart attack, it's out of control. And we're trying to bring it back under control, making order out of chaos, like they say. But training, we're in control, so, oh, this is easy. You know, we don't have to worry about safety, about getting hurt, about killing a guy, about maiming somebody. No, we do, because the kind of training we do, like live fire or cutting apart a real car or the guys that dive and go under the ice in the wintertime to practice and that kind of shit, that's real stuff. It's real stuff. You know, one of the things that came up, Tommy, if you remember, when OSHA passed 1910-134, the two in, two out, when they amended 134, I should say, because that's been there forever. For two in, two out, which is RIT teams and fast teams and all that other stuff that we do. Part of it was, well, what about live fire training? Is that considered a hazard? OSHA came back with a big memo. The font was 14, and it said, absolutely yes, you're putting people in an IDLH atmosphere. You need to have a rescue team. If something happens in the IDLH atmosphere and a guy goes down, you got to go get him. So you got to have a standby crew for training. I'm all for that, man. I think it's a good idea.
No, it's a great idea.
I think it's a good idea.
You know, I think about how this has all progressed. And, of course, the Boulder incident was before 1403. In fact, the Boulder incident was the impetus for 1403 getting put in there. The Lairdsville.
That was 1982.
Incident, yeah. The Lairdsville incident also caused a piece of legislation to get passed that they refer to as Daniel's Law. And basically, it is illegal for the fire department to use real people as victims in live fire training. And I think that was a wake up call, because we've been getting away with it for so long. And it's like, you know, maybe we should start rethinking some of this.
Well, you know, it's unfortunate, but even for us, and we talk about civilian deaths, and history repeats itself, and all the big civilian death fires, the Beverly Hills Supper Club, the Coconut Grove, and all that. But in fact, we have to look at us too. You know, we rarely look at us. The Lairdsville Fire Department on September 25th, 2001. It was 3 weeks after 9/11, actually. 2 weeks after 9/11.
Wow.
His name was Brad Golden. Was the victim of the training exercise. Don't want it terribly, terribly wrong. So, and then I looked it up. It says, and the training death, it says, leads to a criminal indictment. Real quick. Training exercise goes bad. Okay, the department's assistant chief was indicted on manslaughter and assault. Okay, manslaughter and assault. Firefighter Burley Golden was killed. Blah, blah, blah. Hold on a second. It went far beyond. The district attorney said it was far beyond negligence and to the point of recklessness. The exercise was conducted in an old wooden house with a single staircase and boarded up windows. Blah, blah, blah. Let me see if it says something about 1403. And no talk about the New York Penal Code. Blah, blah, blah.
And I am I stand corrected, because that should be Brad's Law and not Daniel's Law.
Oh, Brad. Named after Bradley Golden?
Yes.
Yeah, so here it says, the National Fire Protection Association, NFPA 1403, standard for live fire, is the national standard for live firefighting exercise. Following a 1982 training incident that killed two firefighters in Colorado, the NFPA began a process that led the issuing of this standard in 1986. So it talks about 1403, and it says, no person shall play the role of a victim, and there are several provisions for attack lines and evacuation plan and blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, just based on this national standard, okay, a suggested national standard, that assistant chief went to jail. And I mean, it was 2001, and he's obviously out of jail, and he's back to doing whatever he was doing. But this is what we're up against, and this, if that wasn't the lesson learned for those of us who were around back then, it's like holy mackerel, you know. It's got to be. So, learning the, like you always say, we have to heed the lessons of the past, or we're doomed to repeat. But I encourage our listening audience, you know, just like we talk about the big fires, like I said, Coconut Grove and Our Lady of Angel School and Beverly Hills Supper Club and all the big loss of life fires we had in history. By the way, if you ever see it advertised, Glenn Corbett, also a professor at John Jay College. Glenn's also the technical editor of Fire Engineering Magazine. He's also one of our genius gems in the fire service. He does a great lecture on the 25 most deadly fires in history, and that's something to see. He generally does it at FDIC. If you get a chance, drop in on Professor Corbett. Glenn was also an assistant chief in Waldwick, New Jersey at one time, so he's not just all brains. He's got some brawn to him as well. But read those big fires, but read the other fires. Read the Colorado fire and the Parsippany fire with the bus and Lairdsville, New York. You got to read, especially if you're going into the instruction part of what we do. If you're going to be an instructor, particularly a live burn instructor, you're working at the fire academy, you're doing live burn exercises just for your fire department, just for your company. You need to read up on this stuff to make sure, and of course, by all means, make sure you got a copy of 1403 handy and got everything in place. So the guys that get maimed and hurt and killed, they can't die in vain. We have to be able to get the lessons from that and do better. So we don't have to talk about this again. You know, the idea is not to keep hashing the same thing over and over again.
You know, it's rather fortuitous. How do you like that word?
I just made in my pants. And I just yeah. threw up in my mouth too. Just so you know. But go ahead. This is fortuitous. Wow.
Our mutual friend Gary Kirschbaum he and I were having a conversation the other night about TV documentaries, and he had turned me onto one called The American Experience, New York, and it is an extremely well done documentary. But the one I watched last night took place in the early 1900s, and they probably spent a half hour recanting what occurred with the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire and all of the legislation that came out of that actually not only improved the working conditions in the sweatshops, but did a tremendous amount to improve the fire safety of the factory buildings that were basically jam-packed, locked fire exits, no sprinklers, all that stuff. I thought that was kind of an interesting take on it. Spoke about Al Smith, who eventually became governor of New York, but when he was in the assembly of all the kind of fire safety legislation that got pushed through due to that tragedy and the positive outcome from some of that.
The New York City Fire Department, and over all this time, I mean, they've had the authority to enforce the labor law. The New York State labor law talks about in a working factory you can't have locked doors when people are in it. That comes from Triangle Shirtwaist. You can't have locked doors, blocked egress, blah blah blah. And when the fire inspectors go through those buildings, if they find a locked exit door, they write an immediate criminal court summons. And there's no time, there's no compliance, there's no 2 days. They write an immediate criminal court summons, and that guy who's running that factory, he's got to go to court and explain why his doors were locked. So, the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire, like most other big fires, Tommy, changes the codes. You know, we always said what I heard in college as a freshman in 1974, a long, long time ago, kids. They said the codes in this country are written in blood, because when something bad happens, that's when we change the codes. We're not proactive enough. And so the codes are written in blood, and my professor for life and mentor, Jim Murtaugh, said we do tombstone legislation in this country. He's right. Tombstone legislation.
Yep.
So with all of that, the Triangle Shirtwaist was available. By the way, I just saw something. They're doing a live concert. It's almost like an operetta on the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire at Lincoln Center in New York, in Manhattan, with the Philharmonic playing the orchestrations. And they have trying to think how many people died in the Triangle Shirtwaist. 87, 89,
yeah,
however many folks perished in the fire, that's the size of the chorus. And it's actually, they do some singing, and then the Philharmonic is playing. I'm intrigued. I may have to go get tickets, put on a suit and a tie, and go see the Philharmonic, because I'm very intrigued with what that looks like. Yep. I think they called it Simply Triangle. But interesting stuff. Interesting stuff, man. No doubt.
Hey, I did see that the FDNY lost one of their more prominent members, John Nykrell. Am I pronouncing that right, Ron? Battalion chief of counterterrorism and a former fire chief in Hyde Park, New York, passed away unexpectedly. Billy G had a nice piece up on the secret list today, talking about him and what a great guy he was. And
I didn't see it. Did it happen today?
I think it happened yesterday.
Okay,
but
I didn't see it.
Didn't talk much about what the event was that caused them to pass. But I was, even though I'm not familiar with the chief, I didn't realize that the FDNY had a counterterrorism group.
Yeah, they put that group together after 9/11. In fact, Chief Pfeiffer, he was in charge of that until he retired this year. He was in charge of that until he retired. Chief Pfeiffer, for you guys who don't know or don't remember, he was the battalion chief in the street where the two French brothers were filming the documentary. When they heard the jet come over, and then the guy picked up the video camera and caught the first jet hitting the Trade Center. Pfeiffer was then they jumped in the car and he was heading for the Trade Center, and on the radio he said a plane or a jet just hit the World Trade Center, and it looked like it was on purpose. He actually said that. If you go back and look at that video, he was astute enough to know that it was on purpose. It wasn't an accident. So. And then he went there. He opened up initial command, and the rest is history as we know it. But he promoted up to deputy chief. He was a battalion chief. He promoted up to deputy. In fact, as a battalion chief in the lobby, his brother came in with a company, and you could see the look on their face. And he sent his brother upstairs with his company, and knowing full well, both of them knew that they were never going to see each other again. It was just an amazing thing to look at on video. But. He promoted up, and then eventually after deputy, became a deputy assistant chief, and then they put him in charge of this terrorism group. And basically a lot of liaisoning with the police department, the FBI. You know, there's a task force in the city all the time. So, yeah, so that's a post-9/11 initiative that they do that. Yep. So let me see what else I have here. And speaking of New York, They hit the 200 mark, Tommy, of guys that have died of cancer since 9/11. City's buried 200 more guys since 9/11. Yeah, it's horrendous. It's absolutely horrendous. So they have a separate bronze wall plaque in headquarters. They've had a huge, it's almost the whole size of a whole wall, which they've had in every headquarters building in the lobby. With every line of duty since the late 1800s when it started, and they put a separate one up for 9/11, and now they're adding to the 9/11 one with the guys dying of cancer, and the foundation has done something similar, as you know, for the listening audience. There's a separate set of bricks. The city bought a brick for every line of duty they ever had. And that's over by the 9/11 looking monument with the three guys putting up the flag, and what they're doing also. There's a separate for 2001. There's a separate stone at the monument just for 9/11 FDNY, and the rest of the firefighters in the country run a different stone. And now they're doing the cancer line of duties. Now there's another plaque on a memorial for the guys, but the city's buried another 200. It's just it's crazy to think about that the ramifications of something that happened 18 years ago is still there, and it's still present, and it's going to be present, unfortunately, for a long time. So it's burned into history now, and we're dealing with it. You know, thank God the president, you know, he pushed embarrassed Congress, the president and John Stewart from late night TV.
Yep.
Embarrass Congress into funding it for the next 50 or 80 years, whatever the hell it is, so we can take care of those families whose firefighter succumbs to the cancers and the stuff that people are dying. A friend of mine had a massive stroke last week. He worked for the Department of Transportation in New York City, New York City DOT, and he was down there for weeks, and he was directing operations for DOT and sending in dump trucks and supplies and all that. And his massive stroke comes out. It's from a brain tumor, and he's got esophageal cancer as well. So that's Trade Center cancer. Here's a guy who worked for the Department of Transportation who's got World Trade Center cancers, and he's in bad shape, this guy, now. You know, he was an old friend of mine. We were in the Boy Scouts together many, many years ago. But so this thing is far-reaching tentacles. It's crazy all these years later, and it's still there. It's still there. So what can I tell you, man? Not good. But as we all know, go ahead, buddy.
I came across a story that kind of fits into what I always refer to as news of the weird. And it was a fire chief down in Texas who, on top of being, I guess, the chief of his volunteer fire department, is also a county commissioner. He got arrested on the fire scene for interfering. And I thought, well, what was the chief doing that was interfering? And apparently he had gotten dispatched, I think it was an oil well fire. He called for Fire Department X to respond on mutual aid. The dispatch center realized that Fire Department Y was much closer than Fire Department X, and dispatched them. They showed up on the scene. The chief basically told them to go home. He didn't need their help. He wanted the other fire department. And the basic gist of this is, it looks like it was a mutual aid pissing contest. You know, and it's the, I thought we were over this shit.
I know.
You know,
I know.
I think back to some of the stupid stuff that happened back in, you know, outside the greater D.C. area with some of the volunteer fire companies getting into fist fights on scenes. And I hadn't seen anything on something that similar in quite some time. But, you know, it's time to put the egos in check. And, you know, you got to realize that we're not here to satisfy our own needs. We're here to satisfy the needs of the community. And this would look like it was just pure stupidity.
I can't agree with you anymore, and I don't know who would disagree with you, Tommy. And it's, you know what, it's still out there. There's I know another case in New Jersey, you know, over the last bunch of years, and it was a pissing thing between career and volunteer. Still, that's still around, by the way. And then the mutual aid. Well, this we got a new chief in the company now. We elected him in, and he don't like the chief next door. We ain't never calling him to a fucking fire. They're the next two closest company. They're 3 miles away, okay? And they can get out, and they're active during the day when you need manpower, because it's scarce in a lot of places during the day. They don't call them. They don't call them. This is the chief's friggin' ego and personality. And how do you justify that when people are hanging out the window? You can't ever forget why you raise your right hand. Career, volunteer, or otherwise. You don't forget why you raised your right hand in the first place. Protect and serve and all that good stuff that we talk about. You know, and when I hear about these things, it flips me inside out, man. I can't. It's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Those guys ought to be taken to task. I don't know by who, but somebody should take them to task.
Well, it sounds like he got arrested, so maybe that's what needs to happen, you know?
Okay. Interesting. All right. Well, it'd be interesting to follow the story and see how it all comes out, you know?
Yeah.
That's for sure. So what else you got, buddy?
I see the lawsuit that was filed in relation to the line of duty deaths in Wilmington, Delaware, is actually moving forward.
Okay.
I think and there was a bunch of people named in the suit. One of the mayors and I think one of the fire chiefs, their allegations got dismissed. But the thing I saw that was kind of piqued my interest is one of the things that the lawsuit is looking at is brownouts. And I didn't realize line of duty deaths occurred that there were companies out of service. And apparently one of the first new piece of apparatus on this fire was a ladder truck with no water on it, which, you know, I tend to be a purist, and I understand why you don't put a pump in the tank on a ladder truck, but you should probably have the proper amount of resources available to provide water on the fire when a piece of apparatus shows up, whether it be the engine coming in first, the ladder coming in behind it. This is going to be interesting to watch. And, you know, Ron, up where I grew up and where you spent time working, I think of the city of Newark. They've been branding out companies for years. And every now and then something will come up and bite the city on the ass. Because I think there was a fatal fire in Newark probably a decade ago where the first new engine in that neighborhood was not staffed because of the rotational closing of companies.
And you know, and if you think about that peripherally, any way you want to think about it, peripherally, subjectively, objectively, think about the lunacy that is on the part of the city to do that. And when I say the city, I don't mean the fire chief, you know, but the city, you're mandating the fire chief to say, you know, you don't have enough people, guys are on vacation, guys are out sick, just close the firehouse. It's like, wait a minute, what are you talking about here? You know, what are you doing? You know, it's ridiculous. You see what's going on in D.C. now, in Washington. You know, two rigs hit each other. So the chief of operations puts a note out, okay, and now when they're going into it, you know, somebody calls up, my house is on fire. So they're sending, I don't know, whatever they send, maybe two and two and a rescue and a chief. The first two units are the only ones who go into the block. Everybody else stages three blocks away. Somebody physically calls on the phone. I'm not talking about a pull box. I almost could get that for a pull box. Somebody calls and says, my house is on fire. They send in the first two one-on-one to go take a look first, and then they call everybody and say, yeah, that woman wasn't lying. Her house is on fire. They've had two fatal fires since that memo went out. That's going to be interesting to see, too. Keep your eye on that one.
You know when
you and I know a deputy chief very, very well, no names, but we know him, and we got a good friend who's a deputy there, and he's ripping his hair out of his head, and he can't believe – he can't believe what he's saying. He can't believe that they're doing this, that the city's doing this, you know. And all it does is I don't want to say it's a morale killer, but the firefighters they signed up to be firefighters. Let them go fight the fire. That's what they're there for. You go and intervene, make a difference. Maybe you could pull somebody out and make a grab and save somebody's life. Now, stage three blocks away for a phone call into dispatch. My house is on fire. Are you out of your mind? You know what? I don't know who the chief is of operations or who the fire chief is now. I never met them, but I can't imagine what they're thinking by doing that. Because two trucks bounced off each other on the way to a box. They didn't do it on purpose. It's an accident.
You know,
I don't get it.
You know, I've spent a lot of time in D.C. And
that's right. Yeah, right.
You're
the D.C. guy. Yep.
They are a great fire department, aside from the lunacy that they have to deal with. But, you know, operationally, they had pre-assignments set up of, you know, your first new engine in the truck are going to the street side, second new engine truck going into the alley or the rear of the building. And, you know, they're dealing with row homes and stuff. And pretty much it was almost like watching an orchestra as to how some of that stuff went off.
Yep.
And you know, they're putting up their ladder in buildings, they're dropping lines even before they have a report of exactly what the problem is. They've got all those pieces in place, and it's a timing issue. You know, you look at some of the row homes in D.C. and Baltimore and stuff. That, I mean, they're fire traps. Yep. You know, the advantage of coming in and doing your job may actually save somebody's life. I hadn't seen that part, but I did get up on. I was thinking about Dave Statter today, and just because we spent the last weekend, Sunday and Monday, with Dave getting the memorial stuff tuned up, and I hadn't been up on his website in a while, and I was shocked, Ron. I really was, of the amount of what Dave lovingly refers to as the social media assisted career suicide syndrome. Mm. I'm going to say better than half of what Statter was covering on his website dealt with people doing stupid shit on either Facebook or Instagram or any of the rest of that stuff.
Tom, we got a caller. I'm going to leave you here for a second. Keep chatting. I'll be right back.
Okay. I was hoping these lessons would be learned, that you've got to really think about what you're posting on some of this stuff. And it's like instant, the news gets out so instantly, and if it's something that's going to get you jammed up, you really need to think about either turning your account off or really thinking long and hard about what you're posting for people to see out in the wonderful world of social media. Just, you know, there was some other stuff we came across today, looking at material to talk to you guys about tonight. And that certainly struck home with the amount of stuff. And it's not just us. It also seems to be kind of a syndrome with our law enforcement brethren as well, with cops getting fired for what they're posting and leaving on either Facebook or some of the other. Hi, Ron.
Yeah, a guy called in, and he was talking about the next election, and it's all about the people. I'm not sure. Then he said he had to go take a shit, and he hung up. So not quite as exciting as the guy who called in last year, but semi-exciting. Okay. Hey, buddy,
nice.
If you're still listening, pal, I hope everything comes out all right. Okay. Chucklehead. Yeah. Oh, God.
Yes.
We attract them all, don't we, pal?
Yes. Yes, we do.
Yeah. Peter from Albany, if that was his real name and his real place where he lives. But he was talking about the people, and then he said he had to take a shit. So.
Did you happen to capture his phone number this time? We'll just announce it.
I didn't write it down. I didn't write it down because, frankly, I don't care. So the hell with it. But all right, Tommy, we're coming to the end of the hour here. I don't know. Do you have roll call tonight?
Yes. In fact,
okay. Go ahead, buddy.
Let me just explain to you what I've done.
Okay.
The last show was on the. July 29th, and I was up in the air at about 35,000 feet heading back here, and you and Gary Kirschbaum did the show. The last time you and I were on together was June 11th, and since June 11th, we've had 12 line-of-duty deaths.
Okay, buddy.
Todd Lanthrop from Mathiston, Michigan, passed on 6/13. From a heart attack after a call. Jared Eccles from Springville, Alabama, passed on 6/17 from an unknown medical event at a training. Cole Lodeholt from Ridgeland, South Carolina, died on 6/21 from an unknown medical at the station. Michael Powers from Libertytown, Maryland, died on 6/25 from an unknown medical at a call. On 7/2, William White from Artesian, New Mexico, passed from a heart attack at the station. Neil Cope from Bell Vernon, PA, died on 7/16 from an unknown medical after a call. this one really kind of hit home. Jeff Strobel from Roswell, New Mexico, died on 7/21 from a fire injury sustained from a fireworks explosion. Apparently, the fire department down there runs the 4th of July fireworks show. And I don't know whether it's a sympathetic ignition or what happened, Ron, but what they had exploded on them. On 7/29, Yaroslav Katkov from Cal Fire in Sacramento died on 7/29 from an unknown medical during PT. James Summers from Live Oak, Florida, made the supreme sacrifice on 8/6. He died in a vehicle accident that occurred after he was leaving a commission meeting. Norman Kelmo from East Twas, Michigan, on 8/10. He had a heart attack after a call. Brian Sullivan from the FDNY in the Bronx made the supreme sacrifice on 8/10 as he suffered a heart attack after a busy shift. And Walter Wagaman from Ortona, Pennsylvania, on 8/14 when he died after being ejected from the fire apparatus after an accident. Once again, I implore you to keep their families in your thoughts and prayers and to heed the lessons learned, so those deaths are certainly not in vain.
Thanks, Tom. Just one note for our next show, and I'm not sure. Are we up next month again? Do you know? Off the top.
Peter just sent the schedule. I haven't opened it up yet.
All right. When we're up again, listeners, I got an offer today from I go to an extremely talented seasoned chiropractor. I'm fighting some sciatica. He also happens to be the team doctor for the New York Yankees. And I was telling him about the show, and he says, hey, if you ever want me to come on, I'll talk about chiropractic health. But more than like go to a chiropractor, it would be like, here's how you take care of your back, your muscles, and that kind of stuff. So if I can connect with Dr. Lou for the October show or when we're on next, it'd be a nice guest to have on and give us some good information on health and wellness, something that we talk about briefly, but we'll be able to get an expert on with us. All right?
Do we get Yankee tickets?
I'm going tomorrow night, but Dr. Lou, he wasn't able to take care of me, so I'm on my own. I'm actually going up to the Bronx tomorrow night to see the world champion Yankees as they head for their 28th World Series. So
that's very nice.
Until we're on the back step again, everybody, be safe. Slow down, buckle up, eat right, eat light, stop for red, use your head, watch how you drive, arrive alive. Don't forget to hug your wife and hug your kids and hug them tight when you say goodnight. And make sure you get home after every call. With that, we'll see you next month or the month after, not sure, but we will certainly we want you to tune into the National Memorial Services October 6th, and then also between now and then, spread the word on the need for honor guards. So that's it for us, and we're on our way. Take care, everybody. Be safe. Tommy.
All right. Stay safe, everybody.